Okay, we're just going to begin here at the end of the Mishnah on Kufyud Aleph Amud Bet. The Mishnah is discussing Irani Dachat, which really is a derivative of the ninth Perek. If you remember that in the Mishnayot, the Prokim are actually flipped, and Perek Achelik is the tenth Perek, and then the final Perek is not Perek Achelik, but rather Eluhena Nechnakim. So over here, the Mishnah is discussing, connected to the Perek of Perek Achelek, Irani Dachat, which is one of the individuals that was mentioned in the ninth Perek that are subject to the punishment of Pereg or Saif. Over here, the Mishnah discussed the different aspects of Irani Dachat. And now the Gemara is going to bring a braita that derives some of the lachot that we saw. Tanu Banan, when it says in the Parsha, Yatsu Anashim B'nei Belial Mikir Becha, V'yadichu Et Yoshvei Iram Leimor, Nelchav Navda Elohim Acherim Asher Lo Yedatem. So here the Gemara has a braita that darshens the words of that pasuk, Yatsu, Hain, that they themselves went out, Velo Shluchim. They can't send emissaries or people that do it on their behalf. Anashim, Ein Anashim Pachot Mibet. It's a plurality, and therefore the minimum of Anashim is two. Devar Acher, Anashim Velo Nashim. It has to be men and not women. Anashim Velo Ktanim. It has to be men and not minors. Bnei Beliyahu, banim sheparku ol shamayim mitzavireihem. They have to be people who have shaken or thrown off the yoke of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, just like it sounds like. Porek means to remove a load or to unload oneself. And over here it means that they've shaken off the load of heaven or the yoke of heaven, and in that way they are the problem here because their status is what allows them then to go and push other people to do what they're doing in the city. Mikir Becha, again the Pasuk says that they're amongst you, Velo Min HaSafar, and not from the border, which means that the city has to be situated, not only Mikir Becha in terms of the people themselves have to come from within the city, but also Mikir Becha is a modifier on the city itself, that the city itself has to be within the confines or the borders of the country, and not on the border of the country, because there we have a risk that if you wipe out a city on the border, that opens you up to attack or opens up a possibility of weakening the defenses of the country. And as Rashi says over here, it's a gzeret hakatuv. In the gzeret hakatuv it says, don't take out a city on the safari, even though technically they qualify as an irani dachat. Yoshvei Iram, they have to be residents of the city, and not residents of another city. Leimor. So this is what they're saying. This is what they come to say. Shetzichim edim v'atra'a l'kol echad v'echad. That you need edim, and by definition, if you need edim, you also need hatra'a. For every individual who was convinced to worship Avodah Zarah, you need edim to tell us what they were saying to these people, which is Nelcham Navda Elohim Acherim Ashalo Yadatem. So we need evidence to each one of the people that was convinced to do this. Yitmar, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Chokim Irachat L'Shnei Shvatim. Yochanan says it's possible to divide up a city along the lines of Tushvatim. If you have a city that sits on the border between Tushvatim, the city would partly belong to one Shevet and partly belong to another Shevet. Like, for instance, Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas. So you have a city that's divided between two states. So over here too, you can have a city that's divided amongst two shvatim. Rish Lakish amar, in chukim irachat, libit shvatim. We don't allow for such a division. A city has to be completely within one shevet. And if it's on the border, whoever has the majority of the city in their border or within their borders, the city then belongs to that shevet. Eitvei Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. So our Mishnah, he brings that as a question on that position. That's why we're discussing this here. Shehu midicha mioto ayir, umioto shevet. The Mishnah says that those that cause the people to leave the way or deviate from Hashem, those that convince the city to worship Avodah Zarah, they have to have two qualifications. They must be from the city itself, and they must be from the same Shevet. My love, why is it that you have two qualifications? That it's possible that you could have these people who are causing this deviant behavior, that they are from that city, but they are possibly not from that Shevet. Iika me'oto Shevet in ilolo. And if they're in the same Shevet, yes. If not, no. Shmamina chukim yirachat bet shvatim. The manifestation of that is a case where you have a city that's divided between two shvatim. You have a possibility, or it's plausible to have an individual from the same city, but yet from a different shevet. Where it says, lo, denafalei b'yirusha, could be that he inherited it, inami dehavu le'alei b'matana, or he got it as a gift. So it's possible that individuals have property in the city, are residents of the city, not because they're from that Shevet, but simply because they inherited it, whether it's through their mother's family, whether it's through some other more distant relative that came down to them. But there's a possibility of property going from Shevet to Shevet once we allow mingling of marriages between the Shvatim after they enter into Eretz Yisrael. Then at that point, you have the risk that somebody have property moves from Shevet to Shevet through a woman. And then that's the case here too. You could have a city where you have multiple Shvatim having ownership, not because the city itself is split between Shvatim, but simply because some individuals are from other Shvatim who live there because they got the property through their mother or through some distant relative or through a gift to them. Eitavei. So now the Gemara asks from the Pasuk in Yoshua, Rim Teisha Me'echne Shvatim Ha'ela, that there are 9 cities, Arei Aleviim. There in Yoshua it lists out where the Arei Aleviim, the 42 Arei Aleviim plus the 6 Arei Miklat, which Shevet or how many from each Shevet are given to the Leviim. So it says over there that there are 9 Arei Aleviim from these 2 Shvatim. The 2 Shvatim there are Yehuda and Shimon. My love, Arbo Pago Mihai, Varbo Pago Mihai. Sounds like from there that it's split between Yehuda and Shimon. That means Yehuda donates or contributes 4.5 cities towards the Leviim. And Shimon contributes 4.5 cities towards the Leviim. Well, obviously having a half city doesn't make it to an ear of the Leviim. The only way you would have that is if one of the cities between Yehuda and Shimon was a joint city. It's a city that was split between them. Shema minach, hokim yarchat, the bit shvatim. It says, lo, arba mihai, v'chamesh mihai. Who says you have to split it evenly? Who says that's to be 4.5 from this one and 4.5 from this one? Maybe it's 4 from this shevet and 5 from the other shevet. Mar says, yihachi lifrush perushe, then it should have explained it. It should have been more explicit. When you leave this as a stam or an ambiguous statement in the pasuk, the only assumption you can make is that it's split evenly. If you wanted the division to be any different, then you should have indicated the fact that 5 belong to this one and 4 belong to that one. Absent that division, we would assume it's 4.5 and 4.5. Gemara says, kasha. If you say kasha, we've noted before the Gaonim have a mesora, that kasha is not a tiyufta. Tiyufta is a strong refutation of the position. Kasha means that it's a good question, a strong question, but there are possibilities to answer that question, and that is that the Lashon HaPasuk is difficult, and it's true that you would have read it al-estam, that it's 4.5 and 4.5, but the way to deal with it is simply to say that the Shevet of Shimon really was subsumed in the Shevet of Yehuda. That the Shevet of Shimon doesn't really take a separate area. They are on the periphery, but as part of Shevet Yehuda. And that way you could look at those 2 Shvatim as actually being a single entity. And then there are 9 cities from that entity that includes 2 Shvatim. And that way you could answer on behalf of Reish Lakish and explain the Pasuk. It's not the simplest way to deal with it, but you could answer, and therefore it's not considered to be a Tiyuvta. And even though there is an opinion that Yerushalayim was split between Yehuda and Binyamin, still that was done al Pia Dibur. That was something that was uniquely suited to the issues that were in Yerushalayim. And therefore, it's an exception to the rule and doesn't set for us a precedent that cities can be split between different Shvatim. Ibailuhu, hudchu me'alehen mahu. What happens if a city goes ahead and worships Avodah Zarah of their own volition? They're not convinced by any parties. They simply do it by themselves. Can you create an Iran Achat without having medichim, those that push the city to do that? So the Gemara says, it says, v'yadichu amar Rahmano. The Torah seems to indicate that one of the requirements is ve'adichu et yoshvei Yiram, that somebody pushed the members or the residents of the city to do this. Absent that, v'lo shehudchu me'aleihem, but not if them doing it of their own volition, and absent that, you would not be chayav. Odeoma, afilu hudchu me'aleihem. Or maybe, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that ve'adichu just says that if there are those people, then you have that status. But even without them, they're just talking about what we call the Brat Torah Be'olveh. Torah speaks about normal cases. But the fact that they do it of their own volition, that is less likely to happen. So it just didn't mention it, but it's not telling you that it's exclusive of that. When it says, Tashma, why don't we learn from the Braita? Hidichu anashim uktanim. In a case where women or children push the city to worship Avodah Zarah, over there, it's not deemed to be an Ira Nidachat. Amai, why shouldn't it be deemed an Ira Nidachat? Why should it be any worse than them doing it of their own volition? If you believe that if they did it of their own volition, it's still deemed to be an Ira Nidachat, then when you have women and children that are the medichim, which we excluded in the Braita, anashim velo nashim, anashim velo ktanim, we saw that in the Mishnah as well. So if that's the case, then why not just say, fine, nashim ktanim don't count for anything. It's the equivalent of them doing it of their own volition. Mar says, you can't compare the cases. Hanach batar nafshayu gride, Hani batar nashim viktanim grede. There's a difference. In the case where they do it of their own volition, they are the driving force for their doing or worshipping the Avodah Zarah. In the case where it's the women and the children, they're not doing it of their own volition. They're still being convinced by others, where the Torah says that that doesn't count. By nashim viktanim, either you can claim that it is a gzirat hakatuv, or you can claim that there's something wrong with this city because the city is following women and children who are not necessarily your leadership, or not necessarily the type of people that would be able to convince a whole city to do this. The fact that they did convince the city to do this means there's something seriously wrong with this city, and these people don't think on their own or don't act on their own. The fact that women and children could do that to them. But if they did it of their own volition, maybe over there it's totally separate or different. Because it demonstrates that they really are adukim b'avodah zarah. They're really attached and captured by avodah zarah. And it demonstrates much more premeditation versus the case where it's a woman or a child that's convincing them to worship avodah zarah. So you can't compare the cases and say just because by women and children we say it's not an eridacha, that's no proof to when they do it of their own volition as to what the status is. They follow the women and children, then there's no eridacha. When they follow their own impetus, in that case maybe there is eridacha, and therefore we don't have an answer to the question. Just interesting grammatical Rashi over here as to the usage of the word grede. The word grede, he says, is an Aramaic word. He says that if the word was in Hebrew, grede, that means ligared, which means to scrape off. That's the way the word is used in Hebrew. As opposed to the usage in Aramaic, where Rashi says is, it means nimshachim, people that are pulled towards something, and it is lashon greda. For instance, the Gemara uses this in other places and says, only this. So they use the term greda for that, or simply this. And Rashi notes over here, that means, demafrishinan yachid. Hashem Shu Yachid, meaning it's delineation or designation of an individual or a single item. And similarly over here, it means to pull something away, and grade means to be drawn in or pulled in by something. Whereas the word in Hebrew, which is the word, the way it's used in the psukim, there the garade means to scrape down. And then he also brings that the word garir, which is with a resh, is a Hebrew word also. And that is like when you drag a couch on the ground, that's called gorer. Or what today we know that a tow truck, or when you tow something behind the car, it's called a nigrar. So that's the word gorer. So Rashi over here notes why he thinks there should be a dalet in the word, and it should be grede and not grere, because he says it's the Aramaic word and not the Hebrew word, because the Hebrew word has a different meaning in terms of the psukim. And even though technically grere might have worked over here in terms of the Hebrew, because that means to be pulled or to be towed, but the usage over here is an Aramaic usage because it's the Gemara speaking, and he says it is the word grede. All right, now the Gemara moves on to what turns out to be a very technical problem with Irani Dachat, and I think reinforces what we saw earlier in the Masechta, the possibility that an Irani Dachat never happened. And that's because of the following problem, which is ad shiduach ruba, that one of the requirements for it to be considered an eridachat is the majority of the people in the city have to have worshipped avodah zarah based on the pushing or the convincing of the madichim in the city. Heichi abdinan. The Gemara just asks the technical problem, how does this work? How do we get to a point where we know that the majority of the city has worshipped avodah zarah? The city is comprised of individuals who worshipped avodah zarah. So now you've got to bring a case after case after case against these individuals, and then only then will you know that you've hit a majority. So how do you deal with the fact that you have to go through so many cases before you actually know whether it's a majority or not? The nafkaminot are obvious, which are, number one, the type of death penalty. If it's an individual worships avodah zarah, it's skila, versus ir nidachat, which is by the cherev or hereg. And number two is what happens to the possessions of the individual. Individual worships avodah zarah, their possessions are not affected, whereas by ir nidachat, there's a requirement to burn all the possessions of the city. So those are the nafkaminot as to whether we hit a majority, we don't hit a majority. How do we go about doing this? So Amar Rav Yehuda, danim v'chobshim. Very simple. We adjudicate cases against each individual, and then we incarcerate them until we figure out whether there is a majority or there isn't a majority. Amar Le'ula, nimsa ata mane et dinan shaledu. That's a serious problem because of what's called inui hadin. We have a principle that you're not allowed to tarry or leave someone on death row for an extended period of time. Within a very short period of time, after the verdict is determined, the person has to be executed. Once the sentence is known, they have to execute them in order not to leave them just dangling there and having to suffer knowing that they're going to die. That's called Inui Adin, and that requires that you do this in an expeditious manner. So if you're telling me you're going to incarcerate the people, it's just not going to work. You're going to have to incarcerate them over a period of time, and you have a problem of Inui Adin because you came to a Gemar Din with regards to the earlier people. And the Yad Vamos says you can't wait to reach a verdict with all of these individuals until you've seen the majority of the city's cases, because that time already you'll have aging in the cases and they won't be able to come to a verdict. They'll have to reopen the case again. So that's not a practical solution to the problem, to delay the verdict until you've seen all the cases of the city.
Elamar Ula, so Ula makes another suggestion, which is Danin Vesuklin. Danin Vesuklin. You actually adjudicate the case and then you put the person to death with Skila. You continue to do that until you cross over the threshold of the 50% mark of the city. So the first people that go are considered individuals until you reach the threshold of Rov, and then anybody after that will get the punishment of Ne'eri Dachat, which means that they'll get Hereg or Saif, number one, and number two is that their possessions will be lost or be burnt like an Irani Dachat. So it turns out that you have a little bit of a funky situation in which half the city will get punished like individuals, and then the other part of the city that is in excess of the Rove will then get Hereg and lose their possessions. And it all has to do with somewhat the randomness of how the cases line up. So whether you are getting Skila or getting Hereg all has to do with where you are on the docket that's going through when they cross over the threshold of 50%. But that's the suggestion of Ula. Itmar, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Danim Besuklin, Danim Besuklin. So here we see that Ula's position probably derives from a position similar to this by Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish Amar, Marbin Lahem Batei Dinim. Rish Lakish says, we bring in more courts to the city. We sit down judges, or a number of courts, in order to be more expeditious in dealing with the docket, which is very heavy right now. And that way we can process it at a higher speed. As Rashi notes over here, we don't need that because you can't kill multiple people on a single day. That's only true when you're dealing with two different dinim or two different mitot. But over here where the whole din is the same and the mitot are the same, there a single beit din can go through a number of cases on a single day. But that still won't be enough. Because even if one beit din is going, they can maybe do 1 to 3 people on a day. You need to get through a whole city. So you need to bring in additional bati dinim in order to do this in an expeditious manner. And in that way, you won't have inui adin because you can then adjudicate quickly and reach a conclusion as to whether the worshippers of Avodah Zarah in the city are a majority or not. And then based on that, you can make a determination as to what the sentencing is for each of these individuals. And in that way, you'll have a gemar din for all the parties on a single day. It says, Ini, does that really work, what Reish Lakish is saying? B'amar Rabbi Chava b'yose amar b'oshaya, hotzeta et ha'ish ahu, o et ha'isha hi. So there it says, with regards to individuals who worship Avodah Zarah, that you take those individuals out to the sha'ar, to the gateway. The gateway there represents where the Beit Din sits. The drasha that they make is, ish v'isha, atam motzi l'sha'arecha. A man and a woman, individuals, are taken out to the sha'ar, to the Beit Din of the city. On the other hand, you don't take out the whole city to the Beit Din of the city, and that would cause you a problem now, which means that you can't use a Beit Din of 23 in order to adjudicate a case of an Eir Nidachat. Rather, you have to go up to the Beit Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim. So based on that, your suggestion, Reish Lakish, create a situation in which you have multiple courts, it doesn't help. Courts here can't adjudicate cases of Eir Nidachat. Eir Nidachat has to go up to the Beit Din HaGadol. Ela, so you have to reinterpret what Reish Lakish says and say the following. Marbim lehen batei dinim, they bring a number of courts, or expand the number of courts. Umayanin bidinehem, and they look into the matter. Umaskinen lehu, the Beit Din HaGadol. Once they reach the conclusion, after looking into this, that there are sufficient number of people here to be a rov of the city, then they remand the case to the Beit Din HaGadol, and then the Beit Din HaGadol takes care of it as a Eir Nidachat. And then they will bring them out to Gemar Din, and then kill them based on that Gemar Din. In that way, what Reish Lakish is suggesting is that we have the equivalent maybe of a grand jury, or the equivalent of an investigative court, that looks into the matter, and here you put multiple courts together in order to get it done quickly, expeditiously, and then you remand it up to the Supreme Court in order that they can deal with it, because that's the place that Eir Nidachat has to be decided. So if they decide that it's not a rov, then they can come to a Gemar Din and put them to death, b'skila, for individuals who worship the Avodah Zarah. If they reach the threshold in their investigation of more than a majority, then they say, well, we can't conclude here. We're going to send it up to Yerushalayim, to the Beit Din HaGadol. So
In all of these suggestions, you can see a difficulty. I think that reinforces the position about this idea that Ir Nidachat may never have happened. The requirements are so difficult, the thresholds by which one has to do this are very cumbersome, which makes it almost impossible to happen. First of all, you need Eidim Vatra'ah for every individual, and it has to be that they were convinced by people internally from the city, two men that came from the city. You need Eidim Vatra'ah that they convinced or what they said to these individuals, and then you need a majority of the city. And that has to be done through, again, depending on the situation, the technical problem, how you get to a majority here, the suggestions that we had from Rav Yehuda, from Ula, and Rav Yochanan together, and Rish Lakish, three different suggestions about how to deal with the individuals versus the majority of the city. Alright, then the pasuk says, Hakeh takeh et yoshvei ha'ir, says that you have to wipe out the members of the city, ha'ir ha'i lefi charev, ha'charei mota v'et kol asher ba, v'et b'emta lefi charev. And then you have to wipe out all the possessions of the city, and then every live being in the city gets the cheref. And then the next pasuk says, "Ved kol shalala tikbot zotoch rechova." Remainder of their possessions are brought to the center of the city into the main street. Sarafta bei shetayir ved kol shalala kalil laHashem lokecha vayta telolam loti baneot. Then you burn the city. You create a pyre in the middle of the city, in the main road of the city. And you burn all their possessions in the whole city, and it remains a pile of rubble forever, and it may not be rebuilt. Tan Rabbanan, Hachameret v'agamelet ha'uveret mimakom lemakom. If you have iterant individuals who move from city to city, the examples brought over here are the Chameret and the Gamelet, who are haulers. The Chamor is the short-haul individual, the Gamelet is the long-haul individuals. They are movers, but in their job as movers, they move from city to city, and they don't take up necessarily permanent residence in any city. So at what point does a chameret and gamelet become a member of the city to be counted amongst the rove, versus they're just considered to be outsiders, and therefore they don't have any impact on the majority of the city? Tana banana, chameret and gamelet overet mimakom makom, lanu bitocha, if they resided there, they stayed overnight there, behud choima, and they also were convinced, along with the remainder of the city, to worship the Avodah Zarah. Im nishtau sham lamed yom, if they were there for 30 days, hein b'saif, umumunam avad. Then they have a din like the Ir Nidachat. They are part of the majority, and therefore they'll get a punishment of saif, herek, and they will also lose their money. They'll be counted as part of the Ir Nidachat. Now that has ramifications beyond just their punishment, it also has ramifications in terms of their contribution towards the majority. They will be counted as members of the city, and so therefore they'll contribute towards this being a majority who worshipped Avodah Zarah, and vice versa, if they did not worship Avodah Zarah, they could also cause the city not to be classified as a majority, because now they count as members of the city. Pachod mikin, if you have less than 30 days that they've lived there, hein b'skila umumunam palat, they are treated like individuals, and they get skila, but their possessions are not destroyed here. So here you see that the definition of the threshold for being considered a member of the city is 30 days. Firamini, is that really true? We have in Bava Batra, kama yeh b'ir v'yeh kancheir. In Bava Batra, we wanted to know, when do you become obligated to pay the taxes of the city? When do you become a resident for taxes? There the Mishnah says, you are classified as a member of the city after Yud Bet Chodesh, after 12 months. So how do you reconcile? The Mishnah in Bava Batra says that you need to be there for 12 months to be considered a member of the city. Over here we're saying 30 days makes you a member of the city. Amarava lokasho, depends what you're looking for. Halam have mi bnei mato, that is to be a member or a citizen of the city. Halam have metve mato, here is to be yoshvei iram, to be a resident of the city. In order to gain resident status, you only have to be there for 30 days. To gain membership or citizenship, you need to be there for a minimum of 12 months. So for the tax collections, you need to be a citizen or a member of the city. That means you have to be there for at least 12 months before you're obligated to pay as a member of the city. Obviously, if you come and plan on staying there, you will immediately become a citizen of the city and have to pay taxes. The question is, if a person says, I'm not staying here permanently, I'm going to move away, once they've tarried there for 12 months already, they become or are deemed as a member of the city, a citizen of the city. By Ir Nidachat, the qualification is not citizenry, but rather Yoshvei Iram, a resident. You become a resident of the city after 30 days. Batanya, as Rashi notes over here, Batanya is binichuta. It is a proof to what we're saying over here, that there's a difference between being a citizen of the city versus being a resident of the city. And we see that by nedarim. When a person takes a neder that involves terminology that calls a person a citizen versus terminology that calls them a resident, we see in the same division in terms of time, which is Hamudar Hana'am Ibnei Ayir, person who says, I will not get any benefit from the members of this city, the citizens of this city. Yesh Adam Shnishtasham Yudbet Chodesh, Asur Le'anot Mimenu. Any person who's tarried there, lived there for 12 months, at minimum, is considered to be a citizen or member of the city, and you cannot get anah from them. Pachot Mikin, if it's less than 12 months, Mutar Le'anot Mimenu, then you can get benefit from them, because they're not considered to be a member or citizen of the city. Yoshvei Ha'ir, if he takes a neder that he won't get any benefit from the residents of the city, Im Nishtahel Lamejom, Asur Le'anot Mimenu, if he's there for 30 days, then he's considered to be a resident of the city, you can't get benefit from him. Pachot Mikin, if it's less than 30 days, Mutar Le'anot Mimenu, then you do have a right to get hana'a from him because he's not considered to be a resident of the city. Right now, Gemara continues to darshan in the psukim. It says, "Hachremota bet kol asher ba," that you have to wipe out every living thing there plus all that's in it. Tarabanan, "Hachremota," and here the Gra takes out the remainder of the pasuk that's quoted because we're going to quote it in a second, which is, "Hachremota prat l'nichsei tzadikim shebechutzala." That comes to exclude the possessions of tzadikim that are outside of the city. If the majority of the city worshipped Avodah Zarah, that means the majority of the city are going to be put to death. But there is a minority of the city that are not going to be put to death because they didn't worship Avodah Zarah. So they get their lives, they're able to walk away from the Ir HaNidachat. But their possessions or their money stays with the city and is burnt with the city. So here, the Gemara brings a braita that tells us that when it comes to the possessions of tzaddikim, tzaddikim over here mean people who didn't worship Avodah Zarah, those were not amongst the majority, their possessions that are in the city, they lose. Their possessions out of the city, that they get to keep, that's not subject to this rule of Achrimota. Ve'et akol asher ba, that's why the Gra took it out before, everything that's in it, the rabot, nitzei tzaddikim shebetocha, to tell you that the nechasim of those that are innocent here, they lose their possessions that are in the city. They don't get to keep those. They get burnt up with the remainder of the city. Shlala, it says there that all of the booty of the city, but it means all the possessions of the city, below shlal shamayim. That means it's the possession of the city or possession of the members of the city, but not stuff that belongs to God. Ve'et kol shlala. Kol here is a ribui. What does it mean, kol shlala? They're a boat, nixei rishayim shechutzala. To say that those people who are caught up in the Avodah Zarah and who are going to be put to death here, their possessions, not only the possessions that are in the city, even the possessions that are outside of the city are all subject to this din and have to be wiped out and brought and burnt along with the city. I'm Rabbi Shimon. As Rashi notes over here, this is Rabbi Shimon Lishitato, his Doresh throughout Shas, time of the Kra, the reasoning behind the Pasuk. He explains, why did the tzaddikim lose their money in the city if they didn't do anything wrong? Mipnei ma'amra Torah, nichsei tzaddikim shebetocha yovdu. Why do they lose their possessions? Mi garam lehem shidoru betocha. What caused these tzaddikim to be members of this city? Why are they living in this city? Mimonam. Because of their money or because of their possessions. They realize that the people of the city are not good people. Nevertheless, they lived in the city despite knowing that they're problematic people in this city. What brought them to do that? What compelled them to stay in a city despite the negative influences? Mimonam, their possessions. So if their possessions are what caused them to be in this bad environment, therefore, lefikach mimonam avad. They lose their possessions because that caused them to be in this bad position or precarious position. So now the Gemara is going to go back and dissect this braita piece by piece. Amar mar, ved kol shlala tikbots, rabot nixei rishayim shebechutzala. It comes to include the possessions of the rishayim that are outside of the city. Now, Amar Rav Chista, the remainder of today's daf is really going to be Rav Chista. Rav Chista, one after the next, is going to have memrot about Ir HaNidachat that basically qualify the dinim that we have from the Braita, from the Mishnayot, and give us explanation or definition to them. The first of which is this, Amar Rav Chista, ubenikbatzim litocha. That's only true if they can be gathered into the city. So this requirement to burn all the possessions of the Rishayim, those people that worship the Avodah Zarah over here, that means that yes, of course, their possessions in the city are burnt up, but not only are their possessions in the city, their possessions out of the city. Rav Chista qualifies that the possessions that are out of the city that do get burnt up have to have this requirement of ubenikbatzim litocha, that they can be gathered into the city itself. What exactly does that mean? Benikbatzim betocha. So by definition, any real property ownership outside of the city will not be included here because it can't be nikbatz letocha. Can't be brought into the city itself. Obviously, the karka of the city is going to be burnt because they're going to burn down the entire city and everything associated with the city. But karka that's outside the city, by definition of Rav Chista, will be excluded. But Rashi over here brings, "Menichbatzin l'tocha, nichsei rishayim hakrovim la'ir." It's only possessions of the rishayim that are adjacent to the city, close to the city. "Shecholim l'kabzam l'tocha ir ba'oto ayom atzmo." If within that day, you can bring those possessions into the city, so basically, it's a time-based qualification according to this, which is anything that's on the periphery of the city may not be in the city itself, but anything within the periphery of the city which can bring it within that day to the city, that will be required to be burnt along with the other shlal that's in the city itself. But anything that's beyond a day's journey, that won't be included because it can't be nikbatzim l'tocha. So that's the first way that Rashi brings the definition of Rav Chista. Then Rashi says, v'dafka, Shekvarayu the tocha. That's only true if these possessions were once in the city. El me'achshav ayu mufkadim biyad acherim. But now they're outside the city. Avalo ayu me'olam betocha. If they were never in the city at all, for instance, he gets Yerusha, or he inherits it, or he gets it a present outside the city. Lo karinin bashlala veina mamon avad. That's not called the shlal of the city. So Rashi here says that Rav Chista has two requirements in terms of being deemed to be the shlal of the city. The first of which is, it has to be something that is within a day's periphery, day's collection, to bring it within to the city. And number two is, it has to have once been in the city to be classified as shlal of the city. That's the way Rashi defines it. Meiri suggests that menikbatzim betocha means that these are possessions that go in and out of the city. For example, animals. Animals that during the day graze outside the city, but at night are brought back into the city, they're included in the shlal of the city. So he sees ubinikbatzim betocha as defining the item, and the item is defined as something that is brought into the city on a regular basis, which are animals that normally graze outside, but at night they come back into the city. Or the Rambam takes an approach which is much simpler and just says anything that is found in the city. Nikbatzim betocha doesn't have like a broad definition of things outside the city. It simply means anything you can find in the city on that day, that's what gets burnt up. So he takes a much simpler and toned down approach, means less inclusive, which just means nikbatzim betocha means anything you can pile up that day in the city, that's part of the shlal of the city, and therefore things that are outside of the city don't really count. It has to be something that's very proximate to the city, and things that are found in the city at that time. So that's the definition, although that really, really narrows the definition, makes it almost not different than that of the tzaddikim. Now the Gemara continues and says, Amar Rav Chista pikdonot shel anshei ir hanidachat. If you have deposits of the people of Ir Nidachat, mutarim, those are mutar. Hey chidami, the Gemara wants to know what's the scenario. Ilema de'ir acheret, they are pikdonot, deposits from another city, vitnehu begava, and they were deposited with people or in the city that's becoming an Ir Nidachat, pshita de mutarim. It's clear there that they are mutar, delav shlalahu. That's not the possessions of this city. These are possessions of someone else, and therefore that someone else can take their possessions back, and they're not subject to the punishment of the Ir Nidachat. Vela didhu, v'itnehu b'ir acheret. Now what are you going to suggest? It belongs to someone who is in the Ir Nidachat, and they've deposited it with someone outside of the Ir Nidachat. Idin ikbatzim l'tocha, if they can be brought into the city and gathered in, amai mutarim, then why are they mutar? In that the way that Rashi defined it, and the Yad Ramah defined it, and the Meiri defined it, if these are items that even though they're deposited somewhere else, they can easily be brought into the city, because they were once in the city, and within a short time they can be brought to the city, then they should be asurim. They should be included in the stuff that needs to be burnt. V'einik batzim l'tocha, if you say that they are not able to be collected and brought into the city, therefore they escape the din of the city, hamrachat azimna. That's already the statement of Rav Chista before, ubinik batzim b'tocha, that only if you can gather them in are they subject to this rule. If they're not gathered in, they're not subject to this rule. Lo, the olam de'ir acheret, the mafkadei betocha. It's a case where the deposits belong to another city, and they've been deposited in the Ir Nidachat. V'chaycha mayaskina, the case here is, t'kon dekabul alei achrayut. The member of the Ir Nidachat took responsibility for the item, which means that he basically guaranteed the item and said that if it's lost or anything happens to it, I will have to replace it. So that makes it much more like the ownership of the individual who is guarding it, watching it. A deposit that's given to him, that's one thing, because that deposit belongs to the owner, wherever it is. But once you accept achrayut on it, that means that this object can be monetized in a sense, which is that you have a monetary obligation to ensure that this object's still there, and it makes you a quasi-owner of the object. So much so, that the Gemara in Pesachim says that when you have someone who's mekabel lehem achrayut, if it's a Jew that's taking a deposit from a non-Jew, then it becomes like chametz shavar alav haPesach. Because of the achrayut that he accepted, makes it like him, it's his chametz, and he's chayav for it. And vice versa, if you deposit with a goy, and the goy has achrayut for it, it's not chametz shavar alav haPesach. So we see that achrayut has a significant influence over the status of the item. And so to here, you would have thought that if the people of the Erni Dachat accept achrayut on it, that Maudatema came into Kabbalah le'achrayut kedidei dami, because he accepted responsibility for it, it's considered as if it is his, and therefore it would be part of the shlal of the city, Kamash Malan, that we don't say that, and it still remains in the ownership or the possession of the other individual. Now, based on what I told you from the Gemara in Pesachim, that turns out to be a stira to the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says acceptance of achrayut already makes it in your possession. Over here we're saying that the acceptance of achrayut does not put it into your possession. And so now you have a stira between the conclusion of the Gemara here versus that in the Gemara in Pesachim. So what you have to say is that there's a difference in the din of chametz versus the din of irani dachat. Irani dachat has to do with shlala. It has to be the ownership and real ownership of the individual. By chametz, there's a requirement of bal yire'eh u bal yimatzeh. It's not all about ownership. It's about it must not be found in your possession. Over there, there's a broader definition of possession because of the way that it's phrased in the Torah. Bal yire'eh, bal yimatzeh. And so therefore, the threshold for it being in your possession is lower, which means achrayut will make it in your possession, versus here, which is simply about ownership. Who owns it? Doesn't matter if you have achrayut. Who owns it? Whoever owns it determines whether it's part of the Irani Dachat or not. Amar Rav Chista. So again here, over and over again, we have Rav Chista qualifying statements. Behema, chetzia shel Irani Dachat, vechetzia shel ir acheret, asura. If you have an animal that is jointly owned by a member of the city that is an Irani Dachat and a member of another city, over there, the animal goes with the Irani Dachat and becomes Asura. Isa, on the other hand, if you have a partnership in dough, Chetzia Shel Irani Dachat and Chetzia Shel Ir Acheret, one of the owners is a member of the city of Irani Dachat, another one is not. There it's Muteret. There it's fine. My taima. Behema, keman, delo plige damyo. An animal is an indivisible object. And therefore it's considered as if it's one entity. Isa, keman, de pliga damyo. On the other hand, dough is a divisible object, and therefore it's considered to be two separate items. The basic idea over here is that animals are very different than dough. When it comes to animals, you have a single object there. It's not an object that you could easily divide, and it's not an object that you would divide necessarily until after shechita, until you shech the animal and then it's basar, then you can speak about splitting it like an isa. For as long as the animal is alive, you really have an animal in which you are joint owners of the animal, and it's not naturally divided. On the other hand, by isa, you have something that is easily divisible, and therefore, since it's easily divisible, we'll look at it as if it is divisible. And so for the behema, we'll consider it to be that the isur, the tzad isur is me'urav, is mixed up with everything in there, whereas by the isa, we'll make it that it's as if there is a split in the item. The half that belongs to the person in the Irani Dachat will be burnt, and the other half will be given to the other partner who is not subject to that rule. So that's the simplest way to explain it. Rashi over here says something interesting. Rashi says, and seemingly he had either an alternate girsa in the Gemara, or he sees this as being the explanation of the Gemara, which is, afshar the kazayit basar belo shechita, that it's impossible to get a kazayit basar without shechting the animal. Bafilu shechta, ein b'shechita klum, telo l'shechita kaima elo l'mita. And even if you shecht it, you don't do anything. So Rashi says, when it comes to a behemah, this is a terminology that's used throughout Shas, which is that in order to get a kazayit of a behemah, you have to shecht the animal. So for an instance, in a situation on Yom Tov where you need to get meat from the animal, you can't just take off a kazayit from the animal. You need to shecht the whole animal to get the kazayit. And since you have to shecht the whole animal, we need to be able to process the whole animal, even though you only need a small amount from it. Similarly over here, even if somebody owns just a kazayit, in order for the animal to be ra'uy for this individual, you have to shecht the whole animal. And the shechita of the animal is the killing of the animal. And therefore now you've executed on what needs to be done in the Irani Dachat, which is to kill the animal. So killing of the animal then basically is doing what needs to be done in the Irani Dachat. And once you've done that, you've also then executed the animal, and it's now a surbana. That's one way to phrase it. Or the other way to phrase it, and Rashi brings this alternative, which is the problem is that you have own half and half ownership, 50% ownership by the Yerni Dachat, 50% ownership by someone outside the Yerni Dachat, and you have two simanim and an animal. So that basically we're going to divide up and say one siman belongs to the Yerni Dachat, and one siman belongs to the other city. So now when you shecht it, you didn't shecht two simanim. Because the siman that belonged to the Yerni Dachat wasn't shkita, it was mita. You were killing it. The first way Rashi explains it is that the shkita just does what you're supposed to do. You're executing the animal and killing it. So it's not called shkita, it's called killing. Over here Rashi says, maybe not. Maybe shkita is called shkita. But the problem is that it's an animal that's divided. Half the animal belongs to the Yerni Dachat, half not. So then when you shecht it and you need two simanim in order to make it a kosher shkita, you're missing one of the simanim in essence, because one of the simanim belonged to the Yerni Dachat, which means you killed it and not shechted it. The other siman belongs to the person who it's mutar. But you didn't shecht two simanim, and that leaves the basar being asur, because once you've shechted the animal then turns into an isa. Basar, or an animal that is already dead, is a divisible object. It becomes like an isa. So what we're suggesting over here is, if you shechted it, then you would move it from being a behemah to being an isa. And what Rashi says is there's a failure in the shechita. There's either a broad failure in the shechita, because then you're executing the animal, which is doing the mita, and the only way to do the mita for the animal is to kill the whole animal, and therefore all you've done is executed the animal like Yerni Dachat, or the other way he phrased it was simply that you need two simanim, and over here you're only going to get one siman, because 50% of it is owned by the Yerni Dachat, which is killing and not shechting. So in neither case do you end up with an animal that shechted. You end up with a dead animal, and that's not going to help you, because once the animal's dead, it's a nevela, and you can't use it. So he says that the problem is in that switching it from being a live animal to a dead animal doesn't get you to make it into an isa. You could argue that there's breira, whereas by the isa, we'll make it that it's as if there is a split in the item, and that this part belongs to this person, that belongs to this person. And so for the behema, you could argue that's the simple reading of the Gemara before, which is that this is an indivisible object, and therefore it's all the eser and heter are mixed together. And since that's the case, you don't have breira, an ability to separate it, as versus the isa, which is always a divisible object. And therefore, you can always define which part belongs to whom. So that might be the failure by the animal, which is that you can never separate the isa from heter, and it's always considered to be mi'urav. But then you have to deal with what happens if you do shecht it, can you then make it into a divisible object? So you could argue that it was mi'urav, and you can't separate it by making shechita and saying that it's breira l'mafreya. Or, you have to say here that the shechita is not effective in making it into an isa because it's an ineffective shechita. And the question is, how ineffective is the shechita? Is it completely ineffective, or maybe it has some effect on the animal? So then, Gemara says, Bayrav chista, behemat irani dachat, ma'u titane ba shechita l'tara midei nevela. Alright, let us agree that the animal itself is asur bahana'ah. But what is the status of the animal in terms of tara minevela? We have this by, for instance, a trefa. By a trefa, the animal itself is not allowed to be eaten because of the fact that it's a trefa. Then the shechita of the animal makes it that this trefa is not mitame kinevela. So shechita can help to remove the status of nevela, even though it may not be mutar to eat the animal. So that's his question over here too. Is the shechita effective enough to change the animal from being a nevela into an ois nevela to being tahor? Or is the shechita so not a shechita that it's classified as being a nevela no matter what? So the fi cherev amar rachmana, the Torah says you have to kill it by the sword. Loshna shachta mishchat, loshna katla miktal. Doesn't matter how you do it, whether you do it through shechita or you do it through the cherev and just killing it with the sword, in either way you've accomplished what the Torah wants. So shechita is irrelevant in that case, because it's just an execution of what the Torah is asking you for. The fact that you did the cherev in a way that counts as shechita doesn't make any difference here. Odilma, came into shachta, mahani la shechita. Or maybe we say that shechita, even though yes, you're accomplishing what the Torah says by cherev, but the fact that you did it as a shechita makes it that it qualifies to take it away from being tumat nevela. Mai, what's the din here? Teiku. Here the Gemara leaves that as being unresolved. By Rav Yosef, Se'ar Nashim Tzidkaniyot Mahu. The hair of the women who are Tzidkaniyot, what is the din? Amarova Had Rishayot Asur? Wait a minute, what happens to the hair of the Rishayot? Your assumption here is that the hair of the Tzidkaniyot, is it spared or is not spared over here, implying that you know something about the Rishayim's hair. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, Tikbots Visaraf Taktiv, that you have to gather together everything that is in the city and then burn it. The only things that are counted towards the shlal of the city are things that can be gathered and then burnt. Yatzazeh, when it comes to hair, it's mechusar tlisha vikvitza v'sreifa. It has actually three steps there. It has to be removed from the head of the woman, then gathered, and then burnt. And therefore, it doesn't count as being shlal of the city. So even by a rish'ah, even by a woman who is implicated in avodah zarah, we don't view her hair as being a separate entity from her that is considered to be the shlal of the city. And therefore, the women's hair never becomes asur. It's a part of her body that doesn't become shlal, and it's not considered to be shlal of ear. That's true by the rishayot, and certainly by the tzidkayot, that's going to be the case, and the woman's hair should be totally fine. Elam arova bepe anachrit. The question is really about a wig. Rashi calls it braid of hair that is done for beauty. It's not necessarily like the wigs that we have today, which are used to cover the hair. Rather, it was something that was worn on top of whatever it was in order to give the woman some appearance or make her feel more beautiful.
Hey, chidami. What type of wig is this? Ida mechubar begufa, kugufa damya. If it's attached to her body, then it's considered to be like clothing or part and parcel of her body. Otricha detali besivta, that it's hanging on a peg, it's hanging on the wall in the house on a peg. Kenichse tzadikim shebetocha dami, is it considered like possessions of the tzadikim that are in the city that get burnt with the city? Vavad, and therefore it's lost. Odilma came into Ayla benafka kalavusha dami. Or maybe because it's something that a person puts on and takes off, we consider it like the clothing of the individual. And clothing of the individual does not get burnt with the city. Teiku, that we leave is unresolved. The Yad Ramah over here has a alternate view as to what it means mechubar and what it means on the peg, rather than like what we're saying over here, that it is something that's on her head versus something that is hanging on the wall. He explains it as being, it's the difference how she's wearing the wig. If she's wearing the wig in such a way that it's attached to the head, whether they use some sort of weaving or glue to hold it on, that's considered to be on her head. Tali besifta means that it's something that's maybe wrapped around her ears or uses a headband to hold it on, but it's not really attached to her head. So that's the way that the Yad Ramah distinguishes the case here, not between on the head and on the wall, but rather how well is it put on the head. That's the Yad Ramah's view on it. Although Rashi seems to indicate whether it's on the head versus on the wall. And the question is it considered to be clothing? Or is it considered to be shalom? And that we don't know. We leave it as a taken, an unresolved issue. Vet kosh la'latik boats u'toch rechova. Says that you have to gather all the possessions of the city to the road in the city. We saw this early in the Masechta back on Daf Mamhei Amud Bet. Tan Rabbanan. Ein la rechov. Ein anasit ir anidachat divir Rabbi Shmuel. Shmuel says if there is no main thoroughfare in the city, there is no street in which to carry this out, then there is no ir anidachat. U'kiv omer. Ein la rechov, osim la rechov. If it didn't have a street, then we make a street. But my kamiflege, what's their argument based off? Marsava rechova mi'ikara mashma. When it says, et koshalatik boats atoch rechova, that implies that it was a road in the city that existed prior to this point in time. So you bring the possessions to the road that already exists. Just because you make a road now doesn't change that. It didn't exist before, and therefore it's not considered to be an iri dacha because you can't carry out the rechova. Kiva says, Rechova means there's a road. Doesn't matter if the road was there before, or doesn't matter if the road is there now. In either case, it's considered to be Rechova shel ir, and therefore, you will qualify to be an ir anidachat, or you could even phrase it more tightly, which is, do you have to have the Rechova of the ir to be used? If the Rechova of the ir was used already, then it's considered to be the Rechova ir. Rabbi Akiva thinks that even if you build a road afterwards, it's still considered to be Rechova shel ir. Even though you haven't used it, or the city hasn't used it, it's still classified as a Rechova ir. And that might be a more particular way to define the machloket over here, rather than just simply meaning in time, is there a difference between them? But even within time, there is actually a usage requirement, which is it considered a road only when it's been used, or is it considered a road even when it hasn't been used? And that might be the machloket between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Alright, now we move on to Shlal Shamayim, which was the bright that told us that Shlala, the possessions of the city, but not possessions of Shamayim. And that is what we saw in the Mishnah, they showed Shabbat Yifdu. That if you have things that are Kodesh, then you redeem them and you don't burn them along with the possessions of the city. Tarabanan, Hayuba Kodeshim, if it has things that belong to Kodesh, Kodje Mizbeach Yamutu. If there are items that go on the Mizbeach, then they are put to death. Kodshe berekabayit ifdu. If they are kodashim that are going to use for their monetary value to support the Beit HaMikdash, then they are redeemed. Utrumot, your kavu,
And when it comes to truma, we let it rot. Maiser sheni v'kitvei hakodesh iganzu. And if it is maiser sheni or kitvei hakodesh, they're put into gniza. Rabbi Shimon Omer behemta v'lo behemat b'chor umaser. So when it comes to the behemot, it means the behemot of the city and not behemot of b'chor umaser. Shlala, when it comes to its possessions, prat the kesef hekdesh v'kesef maaser, to the exclusion of money that belongs to hekdesh, or money that belongs to Meiser Sheni. So Amar Mar. Now we're going to go back to the Braita and try to break down and understand the pieces of the Braita. Hayuba Kodashim, if it has items that are Kodesh in there, Kodshe Mizbeach Yamutu. Kodshe Mizbeach have to be put to death. Ve'amai Yamutu. Why should they be put to death? Yiru Ad Shiyistavu. Let them graze until they get a mum in them. V'imachru. And then be sold. V'plud Mehem L'Nidava. And then the monies that you garner from that will be donated towards the Nidavot, to the olot that are put on the mizbeach, either when it's idle or at other times when they need to put on additional korbanot on the mizbeach. So then it become a olat neneva. So why not solve the problem in that way? Because then it still belongs to kodshei shamayim, and therefore it doesn't die along with the possessions of the city. That is a given. Even when it says yamutu over here, as Rashi defines for us, yamutu means that you kontein oto lekipah, you lock it up in the stock, and then you starve it to death, or you feed it in a certain way that it's going to die. So the killing of the behemah is done the way that we do it for kodashim that are no longer usable and cannot be redeemed. Kontein oto lekipah. That's like chatat shemetu baleah. A chatat whose owners passed away, that chatat is kontein oto lekipah, and that's the mitah. So the mitah we're speaking of here is not going to be killed along with the ira nidachat. So if that's the case, it's clear that this animal has been excluded from the shlal of the city, because it's not shlala, it's shlal shamayim. So once we're at that point, why don't we let it graze, get a mum, and redeem it? So Yochan Amar, Zevach Rishaim Toiva. That's because of the problem that these korbanot belong to the Rishaim, to those people that are being killed in the city, and therefore it's a Toiva, it's abomination. That's not something you want to put on the Mizbeach. And so for that reason, we say that they are put to death and not redeemed. Rish Lakish Amar, Mamon Balimhu, that is considered to be the possession of the owner. Because of that, you can't redeem it because it's considered to be the shlal of the city. It's a situation in which you are responsible for replacing the kodesh. So it's a difference basically between a neder and a nidava. In the case of a nidava, you donate the particular item to the mikdash, you donate this particular item to go on the mizbeach. The item's lost, then it can't go on the mizbeach, and that's the end of story. If you take a neder, that's an obligation on the person himself to bring the korban. Now, if he designates an animal to be that korban, and then the animal gets taken away or ruined, the neder is still there and you have to replace it. That is a situation in which you are chayav b'achriyutan. You're responsible to ensure that the animal or its value ends up on the mizbeach. So what we're saying over here, according to Rish Lakish, is the case here is a case where the kodshei kodshim, or the kodshei mizbeach, are kodashim that he is responsible to replace if he doesn't bring this animal. And it's according to the Shita Rabbi Shimon, Damar Mamon Balimu, that he believes that when you have kodashim, where you're chayav b'achriyutan, it's classified as the ownership or the possession of the balim. And then, therefore, it'll be shlala, it'll be the shlal of the city, and if it is the shlal of the city, then it be burnt along with the city. And despite that fact, as Rashi notes over here, Rish Lakish still says that it doesn't get wiped out with the rest of the city, but gets wiped out separately, or yamutu, because v'haide kamar yamutu, v'lo amar shiachrimo ota, according to him, mishum kavod shamayim, that it's a kavod, because of its kodoshim, that kavod is given to it, that it's not burnt with the remainder of the items of the city, but killed separately. So Mar says, v'habin disseifer Rabbi Shimoni, in the Braita, Rabbi Shimon speaks up in the latter half of the Braita, that implies that Reisha loved Rabbi Shimon, that Rabbi Shimon is not the author of the first half of the Braita. If that's the case, you can't set up the first half of the Braita being the position of Rabbi Shimon, which says that kodshei mizbeach, where you have responsibility, is mamon balim, and subject to the requirement to wipe it out with the irani dachat. So the Gemara says, all right, b'kodshim kalim, the kodshei mizbeach we're speaking about here is not all kodshim, but kodshei kalim, mi aliba de Rabbi Yossi Aglili, based on the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, which we see in Baba Kama and Kiddushin, Tamar kodshim kalim mamon balim, who says that kodshei kalim are considered to be the possession of the balim. Aval kodshei kodashim mai, but when it comes to items that are kodshei kodashim, what would be the din? Yiftu, they would be redeemed, because they're considered to be shalal shamayim, and not shlal balim. So over here, the difference being that kodshei kodashim are sanctified to shamayim immediately from the time that they became kodesh. That's because the animal, in essence, really belongs to Shemaim or belongs to the Mizbeach. The majority of the animal, the majority of the parts of the animal are going to be sanctified to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The parts that are given to the Balim are what we call Mishulchan Kavoa Kazochi. You're basically eating off the table of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you portions from the animal. And for that reason, there are differences in the dinim of Mi'ilah, differences with regards to our interaction with Kodesh Kodashim, because they are considered to be Kodesh from the outset, and only once they are put on the Mizbeach does that remove the Kedusha and allows the Kohanim to partake of the Kodesh Kodashim. On the other hand, by Kodeshim Kalim, it's the other way around. The animal really belongs to the Balim, and only once you put the dam on the Mizbeach, portions of that animal need to go to the Mizbeach. But the remainder belongs to the Balim or belongs to the Kohanim. And so in that case, we classify the animal as being Mamon Balim until it reaches the Mizbeach. That is the view of Rabbi Yossi HaGalili. And for that reason, he views Kodeshim Kalim being the ownership or the possession of the owners. This is Kodeshim Kodashim, where it belongs to Hashem or belongs to the Mizbeach, the Hekdesh. So for instance, Kodeshim Kodashim like Ola, Chatat, Asham are all in that category. Kodshei Kolim, like Shlamim, Toda, Bechor, and Maser, are all considered to be Mamon Balim. So therefore, according to this view in Reish Lakish, then anything that's Kodshei Kolim will have to be burnt up with the Shlal of the city, but in a separate way, it'll be Yamutu, not literally burnt up, but it'll be like the possessions of the city. Anything that's Kodshei Kodashim does not get it because it's Shlal Shamayim. And over there, we're going to tell you to let it graze until it gets a momentit, and then you'll redeem it and give those monies to the Nidava. My says, if that's the case, the Tani Seifa Kodshei Berakabayit Yifdu, in the Bright they said that Kodshei Mizbeach are Yamutu. Kodshei Berakabayit get redeemed. Liflog Velitne Bidida, make a much finer distinction within the Bright. But Medvarim Amurim, when do Kodshei Mizbeach get Yamutu? Be Kodshim Kalim. That's only true in Kodshim Kalim, where it's Mamon Balim. But Kodshei Kodashim, where it's Mamon Gavoa, Yifdu, they will be redeemed. That'd be a much finer distinction that you'd want to make based on what Reish Lakish is saying is the position of the Tana Kama. It says, Kevendika Chatat, Shemetu Balea, Dilamita Azla, Lob Sikale. You can't make a definitive statement over here because it's not true of all Kodshei Kodashim. It is true of most Kodshei Kodashim. Since they're not considered to be the Shlal of the city, we would let them graze until they get a moment and redeem them. So that's true of an Ola, that's true of a Asham. What it's not true of is a Chatat, because a Chatat has a special din. It's a halacha l'moshe misinai. It's one of the chamesh chatot hametot. One of the five chatot that is subject to death, meaning that it doesn't get put on mizbeach and it dies and doesn't get redeemed. One of them is chatat shemetu balea, a chatat whose owners have passed away. In this case, the members of the Yerni Dachat are going to be killed. So now this is going to become a chatat shemetu balea and it's subject to mitah. So you can't say that all kodshei kodashim are put out to graze and then redeemed, because it's not true. Chataot will not be in that category, because the Chataot, the Balim, are going to be lost here, and they'll be in the Mitah. And that's why we didn't make that distinction in the Mishnah. So as says, Bishlama Rabbi Yochanan Lomaka Reish Lakish, I understand Rabbi Yochanan didn't subscribe to Reish Lakish's position, Dikhtiv Zevach Rishayim Toiva, because of the Pasuk that he brought, which is that the Korbanot of Rishayim, Hashem has no interest in their abomination, and these people are clearly Rishayim. Reish Lakish, my Dama Lomaka Rabbi Yochanan. But why does Reish Lakish not subscribe to the position of Rabbi Yochanan? Amar lacha ki aminan, when do we apply Zevach Rishayim Toiva? Hani milehechid de'itnehu be'enayu. That's true when the animal or the object itself is still extant. Avahocha kevin di'ishtane ishtane. Over here, since you are exchanging it for a new item, it no longer is classified as a Zevach Rishayim Toiva. In essence, what Reish Lakish says is, the original animal, enochanami, it's a zevach rishayim toiva, and it cannot go on the mizbeach. Therefore, we let it graze and get a mum. Once you get a mum in it, you can redeem it. The redemption of that animal, and then the usage of that money to buy another korban, that new korban is not considered to be zevach rishayim. It is considered to be one step removed from the rasha, and therefore it's no longer zevach rishayim toiva, because it's not a zevach rishayim. You've now, in a sense, cleansed the Zevach Rishayim by redeeming it and buying a new animal. That new animal, which is Dishtane, it's changed, already changes the status of animal, no longer to be considered a Zevach Rishayim Toiva. And obviously Rabbi Yochanan is going to disagree with that point and say that not only is the animal Zevach Rishayim Toiva, but any derivative of that animal is classified as Zevach Rishayim Toiva. But that's the reason Reish Lakish disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan's application of Zevach Rishayim Toiva over here, because he says it doesn't apply because you are exchanging the animal to be brought as a new korban. Now the Gemara continues to discuss the Braita and Rabbi Shimon's position in the Braita. Rishon Omer, Behem Techa, Velo Behemat, Bechor Maser. as be your animal and not the animal of Bechoru Maser. B'mayaskina, what exactly is the case here? Ilema bitmimim, if these are animals that can go on the Mizbeach, which is a Bechor or Maser, that can go on the Mizbeach, Shlal Shamaimu, those are things that belong to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they're going on the Mizbeach, they're Kodshe Mizbeach. Ela bibalei mumim, so what are you going to say? It's a case where they have a mum in it. Shlalaninu, that's clearly the possessions of the individuals of the city. A Korban Maser, or Bechor, that's Tamim, has to go to the Mizbeach and brought on the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim. The Maser is eaten by the owners, which are the Baalim, and the Bechor is eaten by the Baalim, who are the owners, which are the Kohanim, who were given the Bechor before it was brought up to Yerushalayim. So in that case, they are belonging to the Mizbeach, and they should be considered or classified as Shlal Shamayim. On the other hand, if they are Baalim Mumim, then they're not required to be brought to the Mizbeach. They can be eaten bimuman to the Baalim. So again, the Baalim of the Bechor is the Kohen, the Baalim of the Maser is the owner himself. So they're entitled to eat it, michutz the migdash, and it's considered to be their possession. So then why shouldn't it be destroyed along with the possessions of the Ir HaNidachat? So we can't understand what Rabbi Shimon is saying here, that behemtecha comes to exclude behemat bechor and maser. If it's a tamim, it's shlal shamayim. If it's a bamum, then it's shlala, and it should be burnt up. So Amar Ravina, Ravina makes a suggestion, olam bebali mumim. It's a case where it's a bechor maser that has a mum in it. Umi shenechal b'torat behemtecha, something that is eaten in the Torah of your behema, or behemta, which is the word that is used in the pasuk, be'et behemta, yatsu elu she'enechalim b'torat behemtecha or torat behema, ela b'torat b'chor u'maser. The shlal shamayim ninu, that is classified as shlal shamayim. So there is a distinction between how you eat a b'chor u'maser, that is a mum in it, versus regular chulin meat. Regular chulin meat, you can eat it any way you want, and you can treat it any way you want. You can sell it in the marketplace. You can trade it for other things. You can do whatever you want with it. And then you can eat the meat in any way or fashion that you like. There are requirements with regards to a Bechor and Maser that get a mumin to them, which is that you can't just do whatever you want with them. Which is if it's Bechor and Maser that has a mumin in it, you're not allowed to sell them in the regular marketplace. You're not allowed to in any way degrade the Kedusha that's associated with it, which means that there's some residual Kedusha b'chor maser in these items, and that residual causes the item not to be considered your behema, but rather behemat b'chor maser. And the way that Rashi phrases it over here is, the only thing that is considered to be shfal of the year is behemta, your animal, but not something that has a shem levi, has an additional defining word associated with it. And that's what Rashi says, if it's behemat ir anidachat, it's put to death. If it's a behemat b'chor ir anidachat, or behemat maser ir anidachat, that shem levi already changes it not from being behemta, but rather being behemat something. And that shem levi, that additional qualifying name, makes it that it's not subject to the rules of behema here. Whereas the other amal takes a simpler approach, not saying about the shem levi over here, but rather the distinction is simply that you have impositions on the way that you treat this animal and the way that you eat the animal. And therefore it's not considered to be behemta. It's not considered to be your possession or your item, because you do not have full control over it. Since you can't sell it in the marketplace, since you can't put it on a scale, then you are limited in exerting your ownership over this item. That limitation makes it that it's not behemta, that it's not this your animal or the animal of the city. It's an animal that has someone else's impositions of rules on it, and that's why it's not considered to be behemta. But that's the way that Ravina explains it. And the Gemara says about this explanation of Ravina, Upliga de Shmuel, this argues on the position of Shmuel, which Shmuel has an alternate way to explain Rabbi Shimon. Damar Shmuel, Hakol Karev, Valkol Nifte. So he makes a statement here which is somewhat ambiguous or unclear, but his statement is explaining Rabbi Shimon's position in the Braita. When they came to this position, Rabbi Shimon, this is what Shmuel said, Hakol Karev, Valkol Nifte. My Kamar, what is he saying or how is he defining Rabbi Shimon? Hakamar, Kol Shikarev Kshuhu Tam, Vinifte Shuhu Bamom. Anything that would be put on the Mizbeach when it's considered to be a Tamim, and if it gets a Mum, it would be redeemed. Mishlal Imait. It is then excluded from being a Shlal of the city. It's called Shlal Shamayim, and not the Shlal of the city. V'koshu karev shu tam. Anything that's put on Mizbeach when it's a Tam. V'enu niftek shu ba Mum. And when it gets a blemish in it, it's not redeemed. For instance, Bechor Maser. Those are items that do not get redeemed. They're not allowed to be redeemed. They have to be eaten bimumam. They're eaten with their Mum. Then they are excluded mi behema nafka. They're excluded from behema. And now, as Rashi explains over here, according to Ravina, Bechor and Maser are completely precluded from being burnt up or considered the behema of the city. And that is because the behema either has a shem levi, according to Rashi, or according to the Yad Ramah, it has limits on restrictions on the way you conduct yourself with it. And therefore, whether it's a Bechor Maser that is a Tam, or a Bechor Maser that are Balmum, they are excluded from Shlala Velo Shalal Shamayim. And Shmuel says, Shlal Shamayim only deals with items that have the following qualification, which is that when they're Tamim, they go on the Mizbeach, and that when they have a Balmum, they're redeemed. That's considered to be Kodshim or Shlal Shamayim. Other items where, when they're a Tam, they end up, or Tamimim, they end up on the Mizbeach, and when they are a Balmum, they are not redeemed, but rather eaten by the owners, those are not considered to be Shlal Shamayim. On the other hand, they are still excluded from Behemta, because it's not your animal. But your animal is only an application or a miut with regards to Tamim. When they are Behemot Tamimim, that are growing the Mizbeach, then it's not your animal because it's going to the Mizbeach. But then when it's a Balmum, it is your animal, and you would be able to eat it. So the nafkamina between Shmuel's explanation of Rabbi Shimon and Ravina's explanation of Rabbi Shimon is whether a Bechor Maser Balmum is considered to be the Shlal of the ear or the Behemata ear, which according to Shmuel it is. Whereas according to Ravina, it's still not classified as Behemta because you have restrictions in the way you conduct yourself with it. So for Shmuel, Behemta only excludes a Bechor Maser Tam, not a Balmum. And for Ravina, it excludes both a Tam and a Balmum. Truma otir kabo. The Braita says that if you have truma in the city, that it's left to rot. Amar Rav Chista. So again, here Rav Chista qualifies this. Lo shna elo truma biyad Yisrael. That's only true if the truma is being held by the Yisrael. He has yet to give it to the Kohen. And even though clearly the truma does not belong to the Yisrael, it is not spared from being your kabo because we don't know who he would have given it to. Had he given it to a Kohen that was a member of the city, then it would be the shlal of the city, and it would have been burnt up. On the other hand, if you gave it to a Kohen outside the city, then it would have been fine. For that reason, we don't burn it with the items of the city, but here at Kavul, we do let it rot, because we're uncertain as to what the Yisrael would have done with it. But Truma biyad Kohen, if the Truma is in the hand of the Kohen, came into Mamonehu Tisareif. Since it's his possession, he can do what he likes with the Truma, then it's considered to be the shlal of the city, and it should be burnt up with the items of the city. Meitiv Rav Yosef, is that really true? Meiser Sheni v'Kitvei HaKodesh yiganzu. When it comes to Meiser Sheni and Kitvei HaKodesh, they're put into Geniza. V'har Meiser Sheni biyad Yisrael, k'truma biyad Kohen domi. Meiser Sheni in the hand of Yisrael is no different than truma in the hand of the Kohen. Meiser Sheni in the hand of the Yisrael is his possession. The truma in the hand of the Kohen is his possession. Viktani, and despite that fact, it says by Meiser Sheni yiganzu, that it's put into Geniza and not burnt with the remainder of the items of the city. So how could you claim here that the Truma Biyad HaKohen is going to be burnt with the remainder of the items of the city? Ella, Idmar Hachitmar. If you're going to phrase what Rav Chista said or qualified over here, you have to say it in the following manner. Am Rav Chista lo shnayla Truma Biyad Kohen. That's only true about Truma Biyad Kohen, that ir kavu. Since it is Mamon Baalim, but on the other hand, it's not kavod for the truma to be burnt up with the remainder of the items of the city. Your kavod, we let it rot. Aval truma biyad Yisrael. If it's truma in the hand of Yisrael, who doesn't really own the truma, he only owns the rights to give it to the Kohen, then tinaten the Kohen should be eracheret. Then give it to a Kohen that's not a member of this city. And says he's not a member of the city, it's not considered to be shlala of the city, and it won't be burnt up with the items of the city. And so therefore, in this case, the Truma Biyad Kohen is your Kavu, because we're not mizalza in it, because it is Kodesh. So therefore, it's your Kavu instead of Sreifa, but it's definitely considered to be Shlal of the city. But Truma Biyad Yisrael is not considered to be the Shlal of the city, because Yisrael doesn't own the Truma. And then we compel him to give it to someone outside the city, so that it's not burnt up with the items of the city. It's not Otom. We have a Mishnah over there, and as you can see here, that the Marshal points out that it's not a Mishnah, it's a Braita. Even though the Braita is very similar to what's said in the Mishnah, so maybe that's why they say it's not. But Rabbi should be Detanyo. Hatam, Isasha Meiser Sheni, Ptura Min Achala. If you have dough that is of Meiser Sheni, you don't have to give challah from it. Divrei Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Mechayivim. On the other hand, the Chachamim are Mechayiv you to give challah. I'm Rav Chista, so here Rav Chista qualifies this Machloket and says, Machloket, Ber Meiser Sheni B'Yerushalayim. The Machloket is only about Meiser Sheni when it's in Yerushalayim. Because at that point, it becomes the Mamon Balim, the Remeir Savar Meiser Sheni Mamon Gavoahu. Remeir says that even though the Meiser Sheni can be eaten by the Balim in Yerushalayim, it's still considered to be the possession of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He just Mishulchan Gavoah Kazachi. He's giving you the right to eat it in Yerushalayim on his table. Rabbanan Savar Mamon Hejotu. Once you bring it up to Yerushalayim, you can do with it as you please. There are some restrictions, but it's yours. It's your item, it's your money, it's your food, you eat it. And therefore it's considered to be a mamon hadilt. So the difference will be then whether you're chayav in chala. If it's mamon gavoa, it's patur michala, that's Rabbi Meir. If it's mamon hadilt, you're chayav in chala. Aval, bigvulin, diriakol patur. But outside of Yerushalayim, everybody agrees you are patur. Either because what Rashi says over here, she'en laheter achila elapdia, since you can't eat it at this point in time without redeeming it, it's patur mechala because it's classified as mamon gavoa. The fact that you can't eat it without redeeming it and then bringing it up to Yerushalayim shows you or demonstrates at that point that it's mamon gavoa. Rashi brings a seshkin lashon, which is lishna achrina, that by gvulim ein laheter achila b'shat chiyuv chala. That the time that the chiyuv chala happens, you can't eat it. Which means that you're only chayav in chala when at the moment that the chiyuv chala devolves upon the isa, then you have the right to eat it. In the case of Meister Sheni B'Gvulin, you don't have the right to eat it then. Even though you gain the right later on to eat it, that doesn't change the fact, and therefore it is permanently patur. Because when the chiyuv of the Isa came, you don't call it Reshit Arisotechem. And then even if you redeem it later on, it's still patur michala. As opposed to the first explanation, which says it's a technical problem, since you can't eat it now, it's patur michala. Later on, when you redeem it and you can eat it, then it'll be subject to the machloket, Rabbi Meir, and the chachamim. So those are the two ways to explain why, bigvulin, you are patur from chala. So meitiv Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef challenges Rav Chisda's explanation of that machloket based on our Mishnah. Maaser sheni v'kitvei hakodesh yiganzu. When it comes to maaser sheni and the kitvei hakodesh of the year nidachat, they are put into gniza. But mayaskinan, what type of maaser sheni are we speaking about? Ilim Rabbi Yerushalayim, if it's in Yerushalayim, mihav yair nidachat. Yerushalayim can't be made into a near nidachat. Batanya, we saw already in Baba Kama, and we actually discussed this a little bit early in the Masechta, Asarad dvarim nemru b'Yerushalayim. There are 10 things that are said about Yerushalayim, its unique status. Mezoachad meim, and one of them is, Einan aseit ir nidachat. It can't be made into an ir nidachat, most likely because it doesn't have the ownership of a single shevet. It was never split up amongst the shvatim, but given to Klai Yisrael as a whole. It's a joint ownership of all the shvatim, or it's basically a national city. And since it's a national city, it can't be deemed as a ir nidachat. Vela, so must be a case, bi'ir acheret, which is outside of Yerushalayim, vaskua the gaba. The ir nidachat is a city outside of Yerushalayim, and now they brought the maaser sheni to Yerushalayim. When it says, how kaltua mechitzot. Once the mechitzot of Yerushalayim grabbed a hold of it, then already it's classified as being in Yerushalayim, and being maaser sheni, and so then why should it be subject to the rules of the city that's in Ir HaNidachat? Since already it was taken in by the Mechitzot of Yerushalayim, it's defined as Maaser Sheni that's in Yerushalayim, and was captured by Yerushalayim before the city was deemed to be an Ir HaNidachat. It's basically taken out of the possession of the city or the Ir HaNidachat from which it came from. Elala B'Gvulin. It must be Maaser Sheni from an Ir HaNidachat that's outside of Yerushalayim, that's still in the Gvulim. B'Ktani Yiganzu. And it's saying that you have to put it into Geniza. The only reason you have to put it in Geniza is if you consider it to be Mamon Hejot. That shows you that even outside of Yerushalayim, there's an opinion that thinks that Maaser Sheni is Mamon Hejot. And it's not Divrei HaKol that outside of Yerushalayim that you don't have to give Chala, and everybody thinks that it's not Mamon Hejot. From our Mishnah, it sounds like there is. It says, no. The Olam, the Ir Acheret, it is a case where it's a city outside of Yerushalayim that will become an Ir Nidachat, Baskua the Gava, and they did bring it up to Yerushalayim. It's a case where they brought it up to Yerushalayim and became Tamei. So once it became Tamei, then you can't eat it in Yerushalayim. And that's why it goes to Geniza, because you can't eat it in Yerushalayim. Nothing to do with it being an Ir Nidachat. The problem is that simply that's Tamei and you can't eat it. Velifrike, so the Gemara says, okay, even if it's Tamei, then just redeem it. Damar b'lazir, minayin the Maaser Sheni shenitma. Maaser Sheni that became Tamei, how do you know shepodim oto afilu b'Yerushalayim, that you're allowed to redeem it in Yerushalayim? So with regards to Maaser Sheni that is Tahor, you can redeem it only when you're berichuk makom. When you're far away from Yerushalayim, you can redeem it to bring the monies to Yerushalayim to spend on items that you can use for Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. But once you're in Yerushalayim, which is not richuk makom, you're not allowed to redeem the Maaser Sheni. You have to eat the object itself inside of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Elazar has a position that's only true by Maaser Sheni that's Tahor. By Maaser Sheni that's Tamei, that's not true because it says, Kirchak Mimcha Makom, and it says, Lo Tuchal Seito, and you can't carry it. You're unable to bring the Maaser Sheni up to Yerushalayim. Ve'ein Se'eit El Achida. And Se'eit over here means that you can't eat it as well. Shenemar Vayisa Masot Meit Panav. By Yosef and the brothers, it says that they took portions of food with them to eat. So therefore, the way that he reads the pasuk, as Rashi tells us over here, is kirchak mecha makom, when it's too far away from you. When you're physically far away from Yerushalayim, you're allowed to redeem it. Or lo tuchal seito, another possibility is when you can't eat it. If you can't eat it, then you also can redeem it. So far away means when it's tahor and it's far away, then you can redeem it and bring it up to Yerushalayim. When it is unable to be eaten, that means it's tameh, you can redeem it anywhere. Then you don't have a requirement of yichak makom. So in this case as well, why don't you redeem it? And therefore it would be, once it's redeemed, you'd be able to eat it. And then why should it have to be put in Geniza? Geniza is only for something that you're not allowed to eat. Here you can eat it after you've redeemed it, and therefore there's no reason for Geniza. It's a case not where the Maiser Sheni itself became Tameh, but rather something that was purchased with the monies of Maiser Sheni. So now you already brought monies up to Yerushalayim from the Irani Dachat, and now you've bought food items with it in Yerushalayim, and then it became Tameh. Gemara says, Velifrike. You can redeem that as well. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah, Alakuach, Bekeser Maiser, anything that's purchased with the monies of Maiser Sheni, Shin Nitma, that became Tameh, Yifteh. It will be allowed to be redeemed. Gemara says, Kirem Yehuda, Damar Yikaver. In that same Mishnah, we have a machlok. The Tanakama believes that items that were purchased with monies of Maiser Sheni can be redeemed. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes that you have to bury it. There's no more right to redeem it anymore. Never the item remains stuck. Gemara says, Iyachi, my iria, irani dachat. Then why is this a unique din about irani dachat? Afilu da almanami. Any city that you brought this up from, and any place that this happened to, this would be the din. This is not unique to Maiser Sheni of irani dachat. This is true of any Maiser Sheni that was brought up to Yerushalayim, and the monies were brought up to Yerushalayim, you spent them on items of Yerushalayim, they became Tamei. Yikaver, they're buried, they're put into Geniza. So that'd be true of Maiser Sheni that came from a regular city, be true of Maiser Sheni that came from Irani Dachat. Why are you associating this din specifically with Irani Dachat? Elo'olam b'tahor. Talking about Maiser Sheni that's tahor. Gagon, the nofo mechitzot. It's a case where the walls of Yerushalayim collapsed, whether they were destroyed or whether they collapsed. Ukarava, and like Rava says, Dama Rava mechitza le'echol de'oraita. The necessity to have walls around Yerushalayim in order to eat Maiser Sheni is a din min haTorah. Liklot de'rabanan. The fact that when you bring Maiser Sheni through the walls of Yerushalayim, it changes the din so that it no longer can be redeemed, that's only a din de'rabanan. The Rabbanan said, once the item is brought into Yerushalayim, you no longer have the right to redeem it, because the walls of Yerushalayim already captured the Maiser Sheni, and now has to remain Maiser Sheni. That is a din de'rabanan. V'chi gozer Rabbanan, ki itnehu le'mechitza. The Rabbanan only put that gzera in place when there are walls around the city. Because when it's permissible for you to eat there and have mechitzot there, they say that the mechitzot have the power to grab whatever item it is and bring it into Yerushalayim. Ki letnehu le'mechitza. On the other hand, when there are no mechitzot, lo. Then it's not kolate. Yerushalayim is not kolate, mid the Rabbanan. Which means that you have an amazing din over here, which is that if, while there are walls extant in Yerushalayim, then you have the right to eat Maiser Sheni Yerushalayim. If you bring up Maiser Sheni from Irani Dachat, the walls capture the Maiser Sheni and make it as if it belongs to Yerushalayim now and not to the Irani Dachat, and it'll be saved from being the Shlal of the Irani Dachat. That's a Din D'Rabbanan, is saving it from the Din D'Oraita of the Shlal of Yerushalayim, because the Din D'Rabbanan makes it that Yerushalayim captures the item.
Although the Raivut sees that as being actually the reason why it doesn't work, which is, since Klitat Mechitzot is only D'Rabbanan, the Din D'Rabbanan over here, forgetting that Mechitzot fell down or didn't fall down, the real problem here is that it's only a Din D'Rabbanan and it can't protect it from being called Shlal of the Irani Dachat.
On the other hand, when there are no Mechitzot in Yerushalayim, where you can't eat the Maiser Sheni Yerushalayim, if you go up to Yerushalayim, then the Din D'Rabbanan doesn't apply, and Yerushalayim is not kolate, doesn't accept the item, doesn't grab the item. And that means that it still remains the possession of the Irani Dachat, and as a possession of an Irani Dachat, it's subject to the rules of an Irani Dachat, and it'll be burnt there. So even though you brought the Maiser Sheni up to Yerushalayim, the walls are not kolate, because you can't eat the Maiser Sheni there, midoraita, and therefore the Din D'Rabbanan doesn't apply. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Kufiyot Gimel, Amud Aleph.